He stares in the eyes of the man who despises him.
And the day my real mother said when I came out the womb, my little black sister raised in the air like blood. And she was proud, because I was going to take after her and not give her to her.
Welcome to Flight 3D. This is your captain speaking. We ask that you please note the emergency exits and safety signs in the event our journey becomes just too deep.
Super Nigga can't put a basketball down. He leaped tall, Super Nigga, in a single bound. Super Nigga ain't got no degrees, he ain't got no time for that. Street corner, crack houses, projects, his natural habitat. Super Nigga got super strength, speed, and agility. So it's understandable when the cops beat him down to the best of their ability. Super Nigga has no supervision. Instead, he has super instinct. Between 17 and 25 super inches, used to satisfy them super sisters.
With a clone little black girl, who won't die, but fight. With a clone little black girl, who supplements stamina for endless struggles to write. With a clone little black girls like Asada, Sonia, Tubman, knowing what they know. With a clone little black girls like Nikki, Zora, Mommy, Grandma. Who orchestrates training?
Ain't nobody got more than us. Aspiring artists spit saliva in their palms, producing hits, making noise with their fists. Lanky limbros with afros, break beats and pop lock on dance flows. Made a call.
Let me talk to you for a second.
Hello, hello. This is Jacqueline Taylor Adams. I'm your host for this moment in time, and I'd like to welcome you to Industry Mondays. The business of spoken word. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and your other co-host is Nasuni, not your ordinary poet. Right now, Nasuni is, she will be tuning in, she will be calling in. She's not feeling that well, so we will be communicating in a chat room. And unfortunately, she's at the hospital now, but she's on her way. She's just getting some reports and picking up some medicine, but she will be back. But her voice may not be in a tip-top shape, but she will be tuning into the chat, because today we have a very special guest, my mistress, media mogul, entrepreneur, recording artist, president, and CEO of Creator's Child and Soul Sanctuary, Stephanie Renee. She's truly a renaissance woman, one of the most creative people I know. It's just like creativity just pours out of her pores. And she is so diligent at what she does, diligent, consistent. She keeps up. She keeps her communities informed. And she's always doing new things. She's also a poet. We are in the midst right now of uploading Stephanie's work. We just got two pieces to upload today, so we will be playing them throughout the show. And you're just going to meet her. We're going to ask her what she feels about. She's been a progenitor of getting spoken word in a Grammy. She's just, you know, she's passionate about her art form, independent art, and passionate about moving it forward. So we're going to learn more about Stephanie, and I think she's maybe on the line. We do have a caller on the line right now, and I'm going to bring that caller on while we work to upload this music. So I have a caller from the 215.
Hello?
Hello, hi, from the 215.
Hey, Jacqueline, this is Stephanie. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Stephanie?
Very well, thank you.
Great. I didn't know if you would have a DC extension.
Yeah, nah, I've had the same cell phone number for more than a decade now. I'm doing great, thank you.
Stephanie, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Stephanie?
Hello?
Stephanie?
I'm here. Are you here?
Stephanie, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I seem to be having a little hard time hearing Stephanie. Stephanie, can you hear?
I hear you just fine.
Stephanie, what I'm going to try to do, I'm going to get your number, and I'm going to call you to see if we can get a better connection.
Okay.
In the meantime, I'm going to put on a little spoken word. We'll put on a theme here for the Industry Mondays, and I'm going to attempt to call you back.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you can hear me, but Stephanie?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, now I can hear you. Okay.
Okay.
I wasn't hearing you.
I was hearing you just fine that whole time.
Okay. All righty, everything is in clear.
Okay.
So we are here. Nasuni, she's on her way. She had to stop at the hospital. So she did call, and she's on her way, and she's going to tune into the chat because I'm not sure how much a voice she has.
Yeah.
But since this is a global platform, everyone may not know, so you know. The world wants to know who is Stephanie Renee.
Oh man, I don't even know how to summarize that response. The best thing I can say is that I'm somebody who fully embraces the idea that creativity needs to be folded into my entire life, and I'm very fortunate that I come from a family that has always prized the use of creativity and education. So in many ways in my life, it's a combination of how do I help to inform people about things that are going on in the world and inform them creatively. So, whether I'm performing things myself or whether I'm introducing them to creativity in some of its best manifestations, at least as I see it, that's usually what my ventures consist of. And so, I consider myself very blessed, very fortunate to be able to do that on an ongoing basis.
Yes, yes. You are. And you're such an extremely, you probably don't know, but I've just admired you, for a while. I think when I really got to know all the different things you do and could, there are some people we say have a beautiful mind and could, just peep the depths of your creativity. I don't know, remember down at Bushfire Theater when you came down there to rent, look at renting? I think Sassy Salt and Peanuts. And
yes.
I was given a chance of showing you, and it never came to pass. But that's
so
when
wow,
I was
98?
Yeah, I was working down there in 1998.
You took me back with that one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that's when, even then, I was just like, wow. I could just see your creativity. It was like really some great things you wanted to do in there. But, of course, I was just wondering, was it really going to actually happen? But it did, showed me you've been around in all different times, and everything anyone has ever said about you has only been good. And people just only been good. I think the last time I saw you was at the Harvest when he honored you.
Okay. Yes. That was really sweet.
And getting to know you and everyone, and this is Industry Mondays, the business of spoken word. Here we're looking at what opportunities, what can we do to help create a viable industry for spoken word. And we're, looking at bringing people who, have made a significant difference with spoken word, who, live by spoken word, live by their art. And so from that, can you first let us know how you connect with spoken word?
Well, I honestly, I think I started writing poetry really early, just as a means of expression. I like to say that my mom was an elementary school teacher. She taught kindergarten until I was born, and then she taught fifth grade until she passed when I was 11. So one of those things that like kind of united us was the fact that my mom challenged me very early on to say that if I created A work or gold star work, you know, depending on what it was, and I didn't go to the same school where she taught, but if I did good work, that she had a section of the bulletin board next to her blackboard that she would reserve just for me to be able to put my papers up there. So, you know, so the original challenge was write good things that get good grades or get gold stars so it could go up in my mother's classroom. So I think that's where poetry first sort of, you know, revealed itself to me, I guess you could say. And then going through high school, it was much more of a journaling kind of thing. Like I would write poetry, but never really shared it with people. It was more about me sort of dealing with my changing family dynamic because my father got remarried, dealing with the fact that I now had stepbrothers and sisters that were right around my same age and like dealing with dating and all of that. So it became much more of a way for me to chronicle what was going on in my life. And then going to college, it became the I need to say it out loud. And I wasn't even the first person who decided to make that transition. It was after going from D.C., which, you know, was a comfort zone for me in so many different ways, and going to a literally 99.99% black high school to being one of 8% at Penn was a very significant change in my life. And it was the first time that I had ever been confronted with this idea that I somehow was too black for some people and not black enough for others. So it was a real a real challenge in terms of trying to figure out where that balance was. And so I started writing. I had a week between the end of freshman year and when I started my internship that summer, and I just wrote furiously. And then shared that work with my roommates when I got back to campus the next semester, and they were like, oh, you need to read this out loud, because so many of us were in that same space. Mm-hmm. And so I guess you could say that's where my connection to what we think of as spoken word began.
Okay. And that's one of the, you know, poetry and writing and spoken word, you know, that's one of the main purpose is that, you know, it gets out, it gets a voice, and that's one of the, I think, the good things about spoken word. It allows, and maybe because people consider it art, it allows people to really have all kind of viewpoints and all and not be condemned for them. But does that work against it being, you know, well, how do you feel about spoken word being viable as an industry?
I mean, I think spoken word has always been viable. I think what the main transition that when you start thinking about it as an industry per se that we went through is that spoken word was something that was sort of counterculture for decades. I mean, you know, from the beatniks in the coffee shops and using spoken word as a way of sociopolitical resistance to getting into the early 90s, I would say, early to mid 90s, where it was more of the alternative urban culture. You know, a lot of young people began writing, you know, writing this poetry as a means of self-expression, and especially during a time when hip-hop was also very open to different kinds of voices, different kinds of styles. I think, you know, there was a natural way for spoken word poetry to gain acceptance because you had, in hip-hop, you had everything from N.W.A. to De La Soul. So there was a lot of room for individual expression in terms of the use of rhyme and the use of words at that time. And so spoken word really found a voice in the midst of that surge of all of this different kind of hip-hop music. And then, of course, it became famous between the movie Love Jones and Deaf Poetry Jam and all these different ways where people were creating cottage industries out of it. It somehow lost some of its integrity and became a real way for things to be commodified. And then it works both ways because it increased the quality of spoken word recordings at that time. It went from being something that sounded like you just plugged in a microphone to your computer and just, you know, recited, to people actually giving it some production value. And really concentrating on making it something that would be on par with other things you would listen to in your personal rotation. So in that way, it was amazing. But you know, I think in some ways, I think spoken word still struggles with that sense of identity between being a voice of counterculture and dealing with real personal conflict and sociopolitical conflict and being something that people want to bump in, you know, whatever mode they're listening to their media at the time, and, you know, being able to be sellable.
Okay. Well, that's very true. Very good statement. I think you worded it very well. I think you probably worded the best of anyone so far on this platform. Right now, Stephanie, we have a caller on the line. I'm going to see if the caller would like to speak. We have a caller from 901. Hello, from the 901. Hello, from the 901. Would you like to speak? Well, I'm going to take it as maybe that caller just wants to listen in.
Okay.
I'm not sure when they actually cue in, what's the actual signal.
Exactly.
When they press one. Yeah, but we definitely have people listening in. So for all those who are listening in, thank you for listening in, tuning in. And what I'm going to do right now, Stephanie, we're going to take a moment. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. I'm going to play some music, and I'm going to finish uploading your music. I just went and downloaded one of your spoken word pieces, Speeding Bullets, and
okay,
another wonderful JS piece you have right after the intro on the album.
Okay.
So we're going to take a moment, play a couple pieces. I'm going to upload, and we're going to come back, talk to you a little bit more, let people experience your art, and we're going to move on. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
We'll be right back.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Every time I tell somebody I do poetry for a living, they look at me weird, like they don't believe that it's possible. I tell them that it is. I tell them I don't make my living off giving people reasons to buy a CD. That's crazy. I make my living off giving people reasons to live outside the box, outside the cell block, outside the cubicle. I tell them that a life lived without boundaries is beautiful. I tell them that the body can do whatever the mind chooses to. And I ain't got no illusions of grandeur. I know where my story ends, but yours begins whenever you get ready to move. Want to be a lawyer? Take your ass back to school. You only got a short time on this earth, so while you here, you better find your niche and work on it like your life depends upon it, because tomorrow isn't promised. Failure's not an option. Want to be a dancer? Get it popping. Work your angles like an architect with all your tears, blood, and sweat. And disregard the people that'll tell you you're crazy, cause they too scared or lazy and too complacent to make the necessary changes. This life is about risk, jumping in with both feet, cause the answer could be just beneath the surface. And the timing ain't never gonna be perfect, but only 2% of the people on this planet actually do what they want. 60% of the people on this planet work for them. The other 38% are just too far gone. So you better get in where you fit in while you still can. Otherwise, die wondering what could have been. And when you think about it like that, doing poetry for a living makes perfect sense. It puts me in that 2%. I only answer to God. Program managers can't censor my shit. I'm a prophet that prophesies and profits. No gimmicks. I give it to you the same way God gave it to me. The pen is a pistol. The words are a nightstick. I just beat you over the head till you submit. No blue pill, just red. Here's some water. Swallow this. And this ain't about performing. This is two doses of reality. Call me in the morning. This is word is bond. This is you better get your piece of the pie before it's gone. This is one part heart, four parts persistence. Cover the pot and let it simmer. Guess who's coming? coming to dinner. Opportunities knocking. Better pop the lock and let them enter. This is 2005. You can start a business with an internet connection and a laser printer. No excuses. Get on your mission and consider all this the next time you fix your face to ask me what I do for a living.
We will not bow down to racism. We will not bow down to injustice. We will not bow down to exploitation. I'm going to
Okay, we're back with Stephanie Renee. I'm bringing her back on. This is Industry Mondays, the business of spoken word. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams. I'm your host for this moment in time. And if you'd like to call in, please call in to 646-716-7994. We're speaking with Stephanie Renee, and she just shared with us about the struggle that spoken word industry makes trying to stay authentic and as a counterculture voice and not to be too commercialized but still be viable. So, you know, from that, Stephanie, I'd like to, you know, like for you to share with us, you know, different things that you've done. Now, I know one thing I heard, that you were, at one time, a member of the Grammys, the Philadelphia chapter, and that you were working to get spoken word included as a category for the Grammys.
Yeah,
it
is true. And one of the things that was, I thought, really interesting about that struggle is that there has been an internal push within the Grammy board to actually get what most of us think of as spoken word included as a category for a very long time. The challenge with that is that most people who record spoken word albums were doing so independently, and they weren't doing it with a barcode, so it wasn't registering with SoundScan. And, of course, you know, part of what the Academy is all about is making sure that people are pursuing this professionally. So if we're not making the investment to, you know, have high production value in terms of the CDs, and we're not handling the business end of it so that these things can be coded and charted properly, then it was making that conversation very difficult. But that's definitely something that has been floating around for a good long time.
Okay. So do you feel now that I know one thing you did state that I noticed, just, and I've just been working with this since 2006, what really got me involved was really more altruistic. I was always afraid of the music industry. I always thought it was some evil and all. But when my husband had passed, and my grandson, I was taking care of him, and his behavior was so off the chain that it didn't afford me the luxury to go back to the 9-to-5. So
right.
I actually started doing my own business thing. I had a computer and all, you know, so I would give people administrative support. Then I would tell them, why don't you do this, do that? And we did. I did used to have a stand on 52nd Street in Philly, so, you know, I was used to, you know, running a business. So I started providing people administrative support, and my advice kind of turned a little bit more to marketing. And I had learned about October Galleries. They have, at that time, in 96, they had a home art program, believe it or not. And the sort of fine black art just excited me. So I started working with them, and I've been working with them ever since.
Mm-hmm.
But I went from the work, you know, doing a lot of work with visual artists, and, you know, I don't know, when I see something I like, I just feel everybody should know about it. And I think I've been put in a place where I may know people who live in the projects and people who, you know, are seven figures and more. And on both ends of the spectrum, I see a lot of people ignorant of the, you know, the greatness of us as black folks, and that, you know, we're all great, but, you know, as a tendency, we have a tendency to put ourselves down and to be negative, you know, about our own selves, even when we're speaking. We put ourselves down. And so, you know, sometimes I feel, wow, if you could see what I saw, if you could hear what I heard, if just other people could, I think they would think differently, they would behave differently. And I just think that desire drove me to do whatever I could to share. So it started with visual artists and, you know, really try to help them sell their art better. Then I started working, and, you know, at Bushfire, and from there, later on, I
work with another theater company, you know, from the community, but just, you know, working with theater. And so working with that theater company, First World Theater, I met Maurice Henderson. I know you know Maurice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he was... He was on our board, matter of fact, when we first started the theater, he was on the board, and he brought a lot of spoken word. He brought Queen through from Atlanta. He, for fundraisers, he would bring through spoken word artists, and Tamika was also an actress. And so, you know, I started coming in connection with these people, and Greg and all of them, but they would be nice, and they would do things for me, and I thought it was so great that they would do that because, you know, I was like, if I had to pay them, You know, I just thought it was so nice that they would give their time for special events I would put on.
Right.
So I thought in return I would help them because where I saw that they lacked, because, you know, talent was phenomenal. And I always wonder why a person like Kamika wasn't one of them well-known people. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like,
academic circuit is one thing. But even now, Kamika is fierce, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just... So, and I was like, why is she not known? And, you know, and I couldn't understand why other people were known. So I went to say, well, if I'm going to help them market themselves, I had to kind of know, you know, what is the music industry was the closest place. So then I just started getting into everything. And at that time, when I first started, when I looked up spoken word on the internet, audio books would come up.
Right.
That was the, you know, I felt sound a few couple of things, and now it's a big difference. Spoken word, you know, if you put that term in, you know, the artist spoken word comes up, spoken word artists come up, the quality of productions, like you said, have just, you know, changed tremendously. So do you feel at this point in time there are more artists, you know, they could qualify, you know, as, you know, professionals or, like, at least getting their work barcoded and, you know, through sound scans, at least their sales can be counted for, or is still
Absolutely. Very
few artists doing that?
No, I mean, I think that we've come a long way in terms of how different, especially online retailers, are making audiences accessible and creating more streamlined processes for people to get their work commercially heard. So when you think about retailers like CD Baby, and when you think about places like iTunes and Amazon, you don't have to be signed to a label. You can contact Amazon and iTunes individually and get your songs, your albums sold through those outlets. So there's a lot more opportunity for that to happen. The problem now isn't necessarily with the artist. The problem now is with the Academy. And, you know, we've just gone through, and they're still going through, a lot of protest about the consolidation of categories. And so, you know, there have been 32 categories that are eliminated in the 2012 voting process. So, you know, the idea that you're going to get a spoken word poetry category instituted at a time when there are, you know, there's been so much other consolidation in other mainstream or more mainstream categories, I think is going to be really, really difficult. And I can't say that the window has completely passed, but it's definitely not going to happen in the next year or two. Because there's too much going on right now with people trying to get some of these traditional or non-traditional music categories reinstituted. So to think that poetry is going to find a voice now in the midst of this controversy about some of the stuff that people took for granted in terms of musical categories, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. Well, so what do you feel are maybe some of our alternatives? Or do we should just create our own platform?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people need to continue to stretch the boundaries of presentationally how spoken word is given to the public. I think we've gotten really comfortable with the idea that it's one person standing on stage delivering a message within, you know, especially if you're including slam into this, within a particular amount of time. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of idea for dramatic delivery in terms of individual recitation, but not necessarily how spoken word as an art form can expand people's ideas of what it means. There are a lot of people I know who came up in the mid to late 90s like I did in terms of really pursuing it, pursuing spoken word aggressively, who don't go to readings anymore because they're like, I'm not seeing anything new. This is the exact same thing that I was seeing a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, I think spoken word artists really need to challenge themselves to see what the next level is in terms of expression, how they can expand the aesthetic to something that will grab people who think they've seen it all or heard it all.
That is very much true. One of the things for the Master Grill Project, one of the things that came up with goals for a couple years ago was expanding the linear industry and public perception of spoken word, because I do find that most people, when they say spoken word, they basically have one image of it.
Right.
And I also did a survey of artists. I found that, again, the artist doesn't actually view it. It's a half and half thing where they want to be well known, they want to get across, but they're afraid of being too commercial, and they're then at the same time, again, they see it only basically one way. Like one person does one thing, they have success, and everybody does that same thing on and on and on, and which is still good when it's reaching new audiences, but like you said, people who've been around for a while, you just, you know, you tire out. You just don't, you know, you don't want to keep going back to see the same thing over and over and over again. But, you know, I just think part of that is just in presentation, again, where, you know, you have to present to people, you have to present to them the possibilities, and I think in turn they will... some people are visionaries. You are a visionary, so you know you see things in many different manners. So I just think it's a matter of visionaries getting together, and I think even some consolidation. Like there are like a lot of great poetry awards and different programs and all, but I think if everybody would be willing to come together, all of these you know programs and awards, if they would actually come together and actually have a method where, you know, they can vote for, you know, people, but come together instead of this one having it in this region, this group having it, and that group having it, actually come together and really pull together true national awards that can, you know, gather some people. And I think if they would actually do it well on their own as a community, then I think they may have some leverage in being included in some other things, but if you can't be included in other things, Danny Simmons was our guest last month. He said, just create your own platform. Stop waiting for someone else to do it for you.
Yeah, and I think one of the other challenges that people have is that most people now, when it comes to artistry in general, and I say this, fully understanding that we're talking about a lot more than spoken word overall, people give themselves such a narrow interpretation of what urban art or black art is at this point. Mm-hmm. And until we challenge ourselves to drink in a much wider range of what's available, then it's going to be difficult for any, you know, I guess you could say subgenre of what we're doing in terms of black expression or urban expression, for it to continue to expand and elevate, because people are going to be trying to create to formula, basically. You know, and I think one of the reasons why I was drawn to spoken word and what I got from it, you know, before things began to be so commercial, was that there were people who were very obviously influenced by theater in terms of the idea of monologues or creating characters. So their poetry always took on these various tones and voices and things like that, and that was fine. People looked forward to that. It was a beautiful thing. There were the people who were obviously influenced by music, so there was a certain lyrical quality to what they were giving and that kind of thing. And we lost some of that in the idea of people trying to create to what's popular. Whenever you're creating to what's popular, then you're limiting the range of emotion or the range of style that you can actually put in a project or even put in a piece.
Yes.
You know, because you're worried about what the next person is thinking about your art instead of what you want to say through your art. And I really hope that we get that we're reaching a point of saturation at this point where folks are going to get tired of trying to create the formula and are going to get back to that, well, this is just how I talk. And, you know, and really want to give it from that space. They want to give it from that, you know, that very personal point of creation that's individual and beautiful.
Yes. Well, you know, but I think the industry is has a lot of to do with that. That's the one thing where I think independent artists, you know, are blessed sometimes if they're not tainted by music industry from the, you know, the old school, the old way. Right now, because it's a change, I've met, you know, in my process, I've met people, you know, who've been part of Philly, international, you know, for years, almost way back when it started, and part of these major labels. Then I, you know, met totally independent artists and people along in between. But I noticed the people that have been, you know, part of the old structure, they still feel the way that they have to adapt to this new structure. They still think in the same way as the old structure, that we have to totally own and dominate the artist. And so they go after it in that manner. And they don't think about quality, you know, what's sellable, what's this. I've, you know, heard people, okay, this is the new look. You got to look like that. Instead of creating that individuality, finding out who that artist is, who that person is, and then how do you best reflect who they are. Instead, they just try to fit them into molds. I mean, we even saw it happen with Toni Braxton.
Yeah.
You know, she was beautiful. And not that she didn't look pretty when she changed, but all her specialness was gone as far as her look.
Right,
She just, you know, and she was like, I was like, oh, my gosh, why was somebody so gorgeous and pretty as her? But industry probably told her, you know, that's not okay. And I think so many artists get weighted down or they look you know, this is where the negativity in hip-hop and art keeps being perpetrated because people look at what made it. Well, if they made it and they did that, then that's what I need to do. And unfortunately, so, but there are some bold people that step out on their own, and let's hopefully we'll have some more of those things.
Yeah.
So now, yes.
No, I was just going to say that I think that, you know, for every example you can pull out of somebody who conformed to some kind of look or some kind of ideal in order to succeed, you also have the people who really didn't give a crap and did exactly what they wanted to do and were equally or if not more so successful, but maybe didn't do it within the traditional realm of I need to be signed and I need to, you know, get this kind of big advance or whatever in order to put my agenda forward. You know, the people who really, really just give it from an honest space are always going to be successful. And the thing about it is that now that we're in the era of the independent artist, you get to keep so much more of your profit from whatever it took to create your product.
Mm-hmm.
If you're coming from that independent space, that you might have half as many fans, but twice as much money.
Yes.
So you know what I mean? If that's your motivation, then, you know, then people need to really, really look at the hard bottom line of what it means to be successful and start evaluating what they're putting out into the universe. Because the financial prosperity can still come to you without feeling like you have completely changed the essence of who you are as an artist.
Yeah, well, I definitely, you know, agree with that. And just from a marketing standpoint, just numbers aren't everything. I think people mistake the purpose of numbers. You know, you go after numbers because you realize, okay, if out of every 10 people I make can convince 2 people to listen to me. So, like, when I get to the, if I've gotten 8 people, then chances are the next 2 will listen to me. But numbers never equate to quality. Numbers never equate to conversion. You know, numbers alone is not enough. There's actually a group I went to get on, and somebody invited me to it because I was just automatically on a group on Facebook. And then when I went to post on a group, I got a note from the, you know, the admin saying, all of these things, you can't just be posting and all these big things and we don't allow this and that. But the thing about it, they said, you know, until you invite 100 people, you can't post and anything about music. But then they found that they usually can't post anything. But I'm like, first of all, you know, why you don't make that a condition? That should be there when you open, you know, when people join a group. If you were making a closed group, then you would know whenever people want to join and you could send them a message. Secondly, why would I invite 100 people to a group I don't really know about yet?
Right.
You know, I want to find out if this is viable. And then just because, now mind you, they have a lot, I mean, they have gobs of people. They have well over 10,000 people, maybe more, because everybody's required to bring, you know, 100 people. But, I wonder how much business everybody gets. First of all, it's a huge group, so you know by how long your post is going to stay on the wall.
Yeah.
How many click-throughs do you actually get? And then how many of those people do you actually convert? And is it worth the reputation or the possible annoyance of those 100 people? Because, you know, you may have a few friends you know you can just invite over. But rarely do people got 100 people that they can just invite over like that to a group and not necessarily be annoying them without asking their permission first.
Right.
So, you know, you risk your reputation and everything by just doing that. And they think, you know, they boast that they have the biggest, that's their boast. I'm like, well, I asked them, what is your conversion? How many people, you know, since this is about artists and music and helping, how many people music has been have been broken here? What artists did you break? What, you know, give me some output to tell me this is worth at least inviting people.
Right.
And they never answer. They just told me I can't post unless I invite 100 people. I was like, okay. And so I just say that, I mean, and that model works for them. But, you know, just want people to know numbers don't mean everything. So
no,
somebody,
but I mean,
I think.
And I was just going to say, and in that example, not only do numbers not mean anything, but this is not an independent website that they've drawn these people to and asked 100 people to be, you know, one person to invite 100 people to. At the end of the day, any of the money that's being made in terms of ads or whatever else, generally speaking, is going back into Mark Zuckerberg and his crew's pockets, not into the people that are running the group. And I don't take anything away from Facebook because I think Facebook is an excellent opportunity to network and to, you know, get word out about what you're doing and share information. But, you know, when it comes down to the bottom line of who's making money off the site, it is not the individual group owner or individual member.
Yes, and just in that, that's just a whole nother thing. And, you know, I may bring you back on because you're also a marketing genius too. But I may bring you back on another show because in doing the business, I do actually want to talk about us marketing and being, you know, marketing smarter. You know,
yeah.
If you do have a group, if you participate in a group, and when you participate in social media, it should be focused. It should be purposed.
not, you know, as Cedric the Entertainer say, just all willy-nilly. You're just posting things anywhere. You know, what are you expecting the people to do? You know, what is the outcome and what is the why? For people
right.
who do not know you, why should they? I've been part, actually, a radio station, Swerve Radio, who is one of the largest internet hip-hop stations, and they got DJs from all over the world, you know, that, and most of these are professional DJs, 9-to-5 DJs, but, you know, this gives them an opportunity to do their own thing because, you know, a lot of, you know, on the, is programmers, so, you know, a lot of them don't have the opportunity to play what they want to play. And
right.
like any DJ, they're interested in breaking, so they really wanted to try to get to the independent movement. Now, they're typical hip-hop, so it's a little hard to crack that nut, you know, to get them thinking over. But they provided a platform that the DJs watch. They have the most inexpensive packages around, and they really give you, I mean, for $50, you can do a bump it or dump it. And if you get 50 people to say bump it, they will play your music for one entire week and blast you out to social media for $50.
Okay.
You're not going to get that anywhere, right?
Right.
It was, they closed the group down because the people wouldn't participate. You know, they only want to come on. First of all, we had to start shutting people out. He later asked me to be an admin because I just, it's hard for me to sit back and like, why are taking this opportunity, you know, they come over and talk about their event, this and that. They don't even post their music.
Uh-huh.
So they started just, you know. But I have a social network, and artists post profiles without their music, and they tell you how they're the greatest rapper, this and that, to ever live. And there's nothing there to reflect their music, and their link to their website doesn't even take you to their work.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but those thought processes that you can't be so cheap, everything can't be free, and you have to advertise. And you can be strategic, but when someone offered that platform, and people may think, oh, they're typical hip-hop and all, but they're looking for something different. If they just wanted what they were already getting, they wouldn't have no need to reach out.
Absolutely.
Even though they're probably not quite sure all they wanted, but if it was an artist that could get 50 people to bump their work and they drove that kind of traffic to them, and there are plenty of independent artists that can easily do that, you know, they're happy and they start to see the value. So I really wanted to, people to start thinking differently, you know, about, you know, to, you know, actually make that a show about marketing smarter. How to better use social media, how to have true conversations. And I think one of the plights of many poets, since they write it, since it's such an individual experience as opposed to an actor, you know, most of the time has to interact with people. So they have a responsibility, you know, to someone. Visual artists, you know, they paint. Most visual artists paint for feedback from the audience.
Right.
Know? And, you know, they really don't feel, you know, their art hasn't done anything if it hasn't really touched somebody. But I found many poets, they write, and a lot of times, since it is a personal experience and release, a lot of times it just stops there. And if they recite it and you don't get it the way they feel it should be gotten, I've heard them actually tell audiences that they're wrong. So, I think, no, I actually heard it. So I just think sometimes our, you know, that mode, they kind of have to realize once you go out there and you're actually talking to people and interacting with people, it's, you know, it's a two-way experience. You know, you have to give benefit as well as, you know, you get to share your voice. And they buy, you know, they buy into it. But you also have to give benefit. You know, why should I be a super fan of you? I mean, the art definitely, but why should I stay a fan of you, keep buying your things and all, especially in this age where there can be so much more interaction? You have to, you know, convince a person, you know, why me?
Yeah.
But, so what we're going to do,
we're going to be coming to a close soon, but we're still just started because there is just so much to Stephanie Renee. But we are going to take a break. And then what I want to get into with you is for you to talk a little bit more about you. What are you doing now? What are the different things that you do? I did, this is internet radio, so what's really great about it is it's interactivity.
Right.
So I would like, I know we have a few people in the chat room on the line, if you could take a moment. I posted her link, StephanieRenee.com, SoulSanctuary.net. We're going to listen to a little bit of her music and spoken word, and as we do that, get a feel for her, and then she's going to, I want you to come back and, you know, talk to us about what you're doing, and then how can we support you, okay?
Okay, I appreciate that. Yes, ma'am.
All righty. So I'm going to start with, now I have to find it. Oh, I don't know if I named it correctly. It may, you know what? Oh, it's processing. Okay, still processing. You don't know nothing. I really like that one.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to go to, but I'm going to start with Speeding Bullet because we're still processing.
Okay.
You don't know nothing. So we're going to start with Speeding Bullet, and I'll put you on mute now so you can take a break. And
okay.
Everyone, this is Speeding Bullet from Stephanie's album Hot Lips. And you can find it on CD Baby.
You gleamed like a speeding bullet when you smiled down at me. And only the breadth of your shoulders was wide enough to outspread that grin. I was a little girl to you, a full foot shorter than you. Your shoe size and years my senior both equaled 15. You were everything one could imagine of big brother. You were fast and precise like a speeding bullet as you sliced and diced in your puffy white hat and apron. You were a title instead of action, chef instead of cook. Your position had honor. Those with taste buds tantalized would beckon you from the kitchen to praise your blend of spices and try to make you spill your secrets. While still, you smiled that mile-wide smile and asked them to be sure and come back again sometime. You had an inner spark like that of a speeding bullet. You painted your room red, black, and green and actually understood funkadelic lyrics. Took me to those movies Mommy and Daddy wouldn't have approved of in your black and white Starsky and Hutch car with your afro and your Newports. Man, you were so cool. But you were dangerous. Like a speeding bullet fired at improper targets, you filled your big black frame with white lies. Up your nose and through your veins rode packs of white lies. And you were seduced by those whorish whispers. Believed you slept more peacefully due to those nightmarish lullabies. You believed in its love more than mine. You rushed to Philly to visit me just like a speeding bullet. Wanted to see your baby sister as a freshman in college. Wanted to see some of the purity you had surrendered, but you couldn't stand your reflection in my eyes. You saw your problem through my eyes and were ashamed. You never called me after that day, and I missed you, big brother. Where was that smile? You were fierce and angry like a speeding bullet after Daddy refused to send you more money. He no longer cared to support your nasty habit because he cared. We all lectured in spite of your obstinate deafness and prayed that at least you saw the signs. We were almost relieved when you stopped coming to visit. We all loved you too much to watch death in slow motion. But death comes fast for speeding bullets when the impact is point blank, when you're exceeding even your own speed limits. Where were you going that late at night, that night late in December with our presence in the back seat? Seems like poetic justice that you were killed by a man who was running from the law when you were so desperately running away from yourself. Didn't you know that eventually you would become the target? Didn't you know that speeding bullets explode.
Wow, that was a nice piece. Well, I'm waiting for the other one to upload, and since we're dealing with women, here's a person that I'm sure Stephanie knows. So we're going to go to Whole Woman by Rhapsody, and then we're going to end this set with Stephanie's You Don't Know Nothing. So this is Whole Woman by Rhapsody from her album, Spoke Inward.
I can't do this. This is too much. What am I supposed to do? I don't know what to do. I need help. I need to have something right. I need answers. Who's going to be there? I've messed up so much. I feel like I've tried everything, but now what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Just breathe. I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I can't live a whole life with half a self, with half of me in tow, saving the potential in me for some rainy day as if there isn't more to be living for. How can God work with half a woman towards her full potential? How can he pour blessings into my cup that overfloweth if my insecurities and sins have created holes that can't store it? I wrestle with principalities against my own flesh and blood, looking towards the mark of the higher calling, but that takes a whole lot of faith. And to follow where he leads takes a whole lot of dedication. And to stand in the face of my fears, or to proclaim the life of Christ, or even to love my neighbor, takes a whole lot of preparation. So half of me won't do. Giving only half my day, or half my thoughts, or half of everything I got is not only useless but unwise when God sees me wholly with his own eyes. When God in his grace sees me wholly with his own eyes. So I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I want to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Say, I gotta get it right. My purpose is on the line. And how can I have only half the mind to do what's right, or spend less than half of the time attempting to develop myself into disciplined study or focused way of life, when it takes to committing the whole mind, the whole body as a living sacrifice? See, we want full blessings from the Lord, but we only pray half the time. And sometimes we remember to love our neighbor, but we see God's love all the time. We go into situations and relationships with half of ourselves in tow, still hoping good things will come from them despite. And we forget that to love God with our whole heart takes a constant renewing of the mind, a constant reviewing of our lives. For many of the things we need to grow takes a committed and dedicated whole, not got from simple Bible reading or occasional fasting and praying, but our whole effort with our whole heart gives God the room to bring out the wholeness in us that he created within us long ago. So I chanted like I wanted, like it's part of my whole being, like it's significant, like it's attainable, as if my spirit desired it. I needed to present myself fully as committed to his word. I want to be a whole woman because half a woman can't quite gain wisdom in this world. So each day I pray the prayer of complete reliance on God and all his magnificence, for only he is able to bring out in me the wholeness that he created. I'm not whole on my own, but I belong to you. I'm not of myself, but of you and your divine purpose. I am not alone, but with you. I seek your guidance in my daily business. I'm not whole on my own, but pieced together by your hand, held together by your will. I am not led by neither wants, desires, or personal debates, but ever yielding to that which you lay before me. So today, as every day, I listen to your voice, walk in step with you, seek your wisdom, and lay no claim to my own life, so that I may be aligned with your way. For I seek to be a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. God, I want to live what you made me, a whole woman, a whole woman, a whole woman. Amen.
Hello?
Greetings, people. This is Cody Chestnut, two capital T's, and you're listening to Brother Hezekiah, Cure for the Common Soul.
I ain't never lied to my people.
God
Tie. Cody Chestnut. And we can shut down the economy if we stop shopping. And make a list of demands, hold this country for hostage. Can I be honest? Obama wants change, but we need dollars. So pessimistic, we don't believe in anything, we're so religious. Plus the car's running, got an iPhone, but got prepaid minutes. We looking for closure, cause inside we all self-loathing. Your daughter need clothing, Pampers. Why you in the club paying that hand? What's the king of the parking lot? Now you sweeping up here in a barbershop.
Who you think of next? What kind of cool will we think of next? What kind of cool will we think of next? To hide behind, know how to cut, know how to rap and bang, and how to get you paid with a bonus.
I know I can reach you. but you don't know how much I love you. Baby, I do love you. You don't know.
I know I can reach you. I'll show you, I'll teach you. Cause you don't know nothing till you know that I love you. You, baby, if you just follow the yearning, then soon you'll be learning. Cause you
myself out while the other music was playing.
Okay.
I can't understand. I opened up another window, another browser, everything, and I came back. I was like, oh my, I'm muted out. But I love that song. I love it.
Thank you. Well, I have to give credit where it's due, because it was written by my favorite ex-member of Take Six, Mervyn Warren. So I just did an interpretation of his song and arrangement. But yeah, I love that piece too.
Yes, that's a great piece. So let us know what you're doing. How can we support you?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on for people that live in the Greater Philadelphia area. Soonest way that they have to support upcoming live event is that I'm promoting the official Philadelphia listening party for Layla Hathaway's new album, Where It All Begins, and that's going to be taking place at World Cafe Live, 3025 Walnut Street, next Tuesday, October 18th, from 5 to 7 p.m., and so we're going to have a really good time. We have cocktails for those people who indulge and are 21 and over. We have cocktails that are going to be provided by Hennessy Black. We have a video lounge where people can come in and record personal messages to Layla about how much they love either this album or just how much they love her as an artist in general. That we'll be passing along to her directly. We're going to listen to the album in its entirety. I'm going to be giving away other tickets to other concerts and other little goodies because it's going to be the day after my birthday. So I'm extending my celebration a little bit and allowing people to partake in that. So I'll be giving away prizes that night. And then, of course, we're going to be listening to and selling the album on the day of its release. So if people are enjoying what they're listening to, then they can pick it up that night, which is always going to be a bonus because, you know, Layla has sent out a private message to her email list that says, you know, she would really like to have a number one album. So she's asking people to pre-order it if they can or to just support it on the day that it comes out so that she can have a really good showing in terms of this album. And, you know, we definitely want to support her with that. Layla is one of the artists that I have interviewed pretty extensively and had a chance to hang out with and just enjoy her intelligence and her talent. So I'm very happy to be able to spearhead the Philadelphia area effort to, you know, support this new album. So we're going to be hosting the listening party on the 18th, and then we'll be back to welcome people to the concert at World Cafe Live that following Monday the 24th. So either way, okay, both days, you know, however people are available, we're really asking them to come out and show out on Layla's behalf.
All righty. Well, I'm going to have to make the concert on the 24th because I already had a listening party to go to on the 18th, but what I will do is pre-order. I know it's important to get those numbers on that first day.
Right.
So what else is happening?
Oh, man. Well, there's so much going on. I mean, you've already given people the link to my personal website. So StephanieRenee.com is the way that you can stay in touch with all the things that I'm doing individually. My latest recording project is called Mouth Music. So it's all, you know, if people like You Don't Know Nothing, what they heard, you know, one of those arrangements from Hot Lips, then I hope that they'll also enjoy the tracks that I put together for Mouth Music, which is more a cappella, but really me sort of stretching out, and none of the arrangements on Mouth Music were written down. They were all, you know, sort of conceptualized in my head and then laid down recording-wise almost immediately. So, you know, there's a lot there that's really from the spirit of how I feel about the music and some of the messages that I wanted to give in terms of the song content as well, and I'm really, really proud of that project. So I would love it if people would support that. And there are links on StephanieRenee.com to where you can purchase that. It's available on Bandcamp, so people can listen to the entire thing, or they can download it. You know, they can purchase it digitally and download it there, and you know, and give me feedback. Because, you know, as we've talked about so often, it's really important for artists, whatever your genre is, to get that feedback from the public about what they hear, what they feel, when they're interacting with you and your art. So I'm definitely very, very open to that.
All right. And Soul Sanctuary, if you let everybody know about Soul Sanctuary.
Indeed, I am affectionately known as the Vibe Mistress of Soul Sanctuary, and especially Soul Sanctuary Radio. So as far as that goes, if you look up those people who are very familiar with iTunes, if you look up in the iTunes directory or if you look up online, Soul Sanctuary Radio, then you'll have access to all of the shows that we do. I do a weekly, a biweekly, a monthly, and a quarterly show as a part of the lineup for that. But I also syndicate other people's programs as well, so you don't have to just listen to me and my music selection all the time. So we encourage people to subscribe to the podcast and check out what we have going on there. And then Creator Style Productions, Soul Sanctuary's website is soul-sanctuary.net. So that's where you could find out more history of the nonprofit organization and what's going on with that. And then I also do a lot of freelance work in terms of broadcast production, copywriting, and that kind of thing through my other company, which is Creators Child Productions. So that's Creators, CREATORS-child.com. And you can go there and find out about the professional services that we have in terms of photography and broadcast production, voiceover services, focus groups, custom designed educational programs to come out and do presentations for corporate purposes or for educational purposes. So there's, you know, my dance card is always full. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Now, focus group, do you do focus groups for other? If an organization needs a focus group or agency needs a focus group, you will create a focus group for them?
Yep, focus group research. So for people who aren't really familiar with what that process means, that basically says that you as an organization, as a company, have a target demographic that you want information from. And so we take over the recruitment process to get you people who fit that demographic, and then we sit down around a table with video camera running and ask them questions that try to get some of the answers that you need for your business, and then present you a final report of of what those findings were from that session. And those things are usually very insightful for people because companies a lot of times think that their messages are being interpreted one way, and the public will look at some stills of a campaign or listen to your commercials or whatever and give you some very different feedback, sometimes a very unexpected feedback. And so it's always good to have that kind of insider knowledge so that you know that you're speaking to the people that you want to speak to in the way that they like to be spoken to.
Yes, and delivering the message you want to deliver.
That's right.
The difference between your brand image and your brand perception.
Yes.
You know, your brand image is what you say it is. Your brand perception is what other people tell other people it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there are people that are very well-intentioned. We're trying to get some of these messages out there, but based on some cultural differences and based on previous history in particular markets, there are things that are just not received in the way that the company intends for them to be received. And to be able to hear that back from actual people instead of just a company, you know, a consulting company or anything that's telling you what the people want, if you hear it from the people themselves, then all you can do is take that information and decide whether you want to change it or whether you're going to try and shove your message down their throat and make them see it the way you want to. Usually people say, oh, I didn't realize that's what was going on, and they'll tweak it a little bit so that it gets a more positive result.
Yes. Well, that's great. I noticed that. So actually, you know, when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's really great. So now I will engage. I really, you know, have already decided to add you to my business plan.
Okay. That's wonderful.
I'm working on
it.
Yeah. I'm definitely saying, well, I'm going to add that part to it just to make sure, because ours is all about imaging and changing the imaging and being that, like I said, we're working with people with different type of mindset. You know, one thing, you know, I know there's one group that it had no problem with, but there are other groups of people that think differently. You know, we want to make sure if we present certain images that it gets that we actually get the impact that we're looking for.
Absolutely.
So how can people best support you, Stephanie? How can we best support you?
I mean, I just ask people to listen and to engage with the different live events and broadcast programs, you know, whatever it is that I happen to be promoting at the time. It's really about creating a larger community and an informed community especially. So we really want to have people say when things affect them, you know, positively or negatively, but, you know, just whatever the situation is, the more honest people can be about their feedback and what they feel and need from different media outlets or whatever is very, very crucial for me in order to keep going. You know, I'm very thankful that, you know, this opportunity to promote the Slayla Hathaway Listening Party comes from longstanding business relationships that I have in many different ways, and also knowing that my radio show reaches a particular kind of consumer. So the label was interested in extending that relationship by allowing us to promote an artist that we love. And so that always makes it a win for me, is that I get a chance to try to get everybody else to love Layla's music as much as I do. And I can say that really honestly. Like, I don't take clients for dollars. I take clients because, you know, and usually there's some kind of financial benefit from it, but I take clients in that respect because it's something that I can push with full integrity, that this is something that I would buy anyway. This is something that I would promote anyway just in my day-to-day conversations with people. And so I'm fully confident in saying that I want to invite people out to listen to this and to experience this because I think you will enjoy it and I think you'll be moved. And I don't think we get enough of that these days. Sometimes we like it, but we're not moved by it. And I think we need to have that spiritual and emotional connection to all of this media that we take in.
That is so true. No matter what, we take it in, and it comes into your spirit. So you do want to be moved in a more positive manner, and you know, to be mindful. And when you're blessed to be able to promote and work with, you know, the media and the people that you really like and you believe in, it's really good, and it's double good for business because chances, you know, you're doing a much better job.
Right.
Well, Stephanie, I have to admit you have inspired me tremendously today.
Thank you.
Yes, you know, I mean, honestly, it's like about at least two projects I'm looking to actually engage you on for different reasons. But one thing that you stated, there's actually a project that I'm working on. I'm getting copyrighted now and getting ready to submit. But just your feedback and all, I was actually looking for someone like you who I felt could actually fit in this place that, you know, not too many people that have, you know, the vision of the different things spoken word could be, and that it can basically be anything. It doesn't just have to be delivered one or two ways. It's not too many
right.
people with that kind of vision, and but still connected with the industry, you know,
mm-hmm.
so
yes.
that, wow. So this is awesome. So, and I'm finishing that today. Unfortunately, I have to do a rewrite because of a computer shutdown.
Oh, no.
I'm submitting that today. I'm submitting that. I already have my to-do list. I'm submitting this week for copyrights and then on to the producer. But, yeah, it just is some, you know, great things, and you've inspired me. And just like your last statement, and I'll make sure that you moved. That even though I'm putting together something and there's so many people that want to participate on a platform, and I have to be conscious that I choose people. You just made me know that I need to choose people for music that really moves me, because I know if it moves me, and I consider myself a little ADD, I'm not worried about moving the crowd. So, yeah, not to... just to go ahead and stick to the guns, because it's, you know, it's really about a message.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so it's been wonderful. You, like I said, I will invite you again for a marketing show, just to, you know, we're just speaking about artist development and, you know, about the artists, you know, making themselves more prepared and, you know, better commodities if they really do want to expand their opportunities. And it's not an issue about going commercial. It's just really one, a pursuit of excellence. And I just feel our artists should be able to live by their art. I really don't buy into the starving artist, and our community shouldn't. And
right.
Definitely the artists want to make themselves a good, you know, a good business partner for people to, you know, to partner with in business, but also, you know, as a community, the artists are the keepers of our culture. When we're gone, the artists still going to live on.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't allow our culture to be choked and starved and not shown and not revealed and not passed down because we don't support art. So
absolutely.
Yes. So, we have a final word, a final question here. You have 30 seconds and the whole world listening. What do you have to say?
Just to understand that culture requires everyone's participation in order to survive and thrive. And so the idea that we can be armchair activists and have something continue in a form that gives us exactly what we need is impossible. That in order for our culture to thrive, that we have to actively engage with it as creators, as supporters, whatever is required of you in that instance. But allow yourself to listen and patronize and feel what is going on and care about it. Because if we don't care about it, it won't be around for us to care about it.
All right. Well, on those parting words, we say peace and love. And this is Industry Mondays, and we are out. Peace. And we're going to roll out on You Don't Know Nothing one more time.
Okay.
Ooh.
sun comes up in the morning and that summer comes in June. You know that raindrops fall from the sky and they make the flowers bloom.
Ooh, but you don't know nothing till you know that I love you. Boy, I love you, said you don't know nothing till you know that I love you. Till you know I love you.
Ooh, you know that 1 + 1 = 2, and that's 2 × 2 = 4. You know that roses are red and violets are blue, but you can stand to learn a little more.
Ooh, but you don't know nothing till you know that I love you.
Do you know I love you?
I love you.
I do.
Don't know nothing till you know that I love you. I know I can reach you. I'll show you, I'll teach you. Cause you don't know nothing till you know that I love you. You, till you know that I love you.
Ooh, you know I love long walks in the park, like the ones we always take.
Love you.
You know I love long talks in the dark and how they make us stray away.
But you don't know how much I love you. Baby, I know I can reach you. I'll show you, I'll teach you. Cause you don't know nothing till you know that I love you. Just follow the yearning, then soon you'll be learning. Cause you don't know nothing till you know.